Welcome to the Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. This special series was recorded live at the Market Council Summit in Las Vegas, Nevada. Listen in as we talk with leaders in our industry represented at this wonderful event. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast, where we're going to bring you some great information, some great ideas from the Market Council Summit meeting here in Las Vegas at the Four Seasons Hotel. We've had a great time interviewing a whole bunch of the wonderful guests, advisors, service providers, and our next guest is no different. Greg Friedman, CEO of Private Ocean, is our guest. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, as we were preparing for the podcast, you had given me a bunch of great points and things about you from a professional standpoint. One of the things that you said right out of the gate was, you have to do the work. Let's talk about your work. Let's talk about your journey. How did you get from, well, I even kind of want to know where you started, to Private Ocean today?
Great question. Well, I actually got into the business in 1989. So I'm a lot older than I look, even though you can't see me. And joined Cigna, a large insurance company, but always knew I was going to start my own shop. 91, set up shop, hung a shingle when that was a lot easier to do. Mm-hmm. And that really, but 89 was the beginning of the journey. And spent years growing the company and really always thought I would just be a small shop. I would be master of my own domain. I would have a few support people, and it would be great. And what I realized is that as I continued to have success, is I really wanted to serve more people. I felt like I hit a ceiling around 50 to 75 clients, and I really wanted to serve more. So I hired a young advisor, trained them. Well, then I realized I can't take a vacation. I'm the only guy, I'm the guy, whatever that means. And at the time, I read a book called The E-Myth, which is definitely out there.
Yep.
And it was one of the turning points because it really made me rethink the whole, do I want to just be a practice or do I want to be a business? And at that point, I made the decision to move into a business. So that was one. There's some other very influential moments, but I'll stop there and let you ask your questions.
Absolutely.
But that was a big one.
Okay, so for those people who don't know, you built a very well-known business. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that journey and what that business was?
Well, sure. Actually, I'll tell you where we are today, and then I'll work backwards. Okay. Private Ocean today is $2.2 billion. We have four offices: Seattle, San Francisco, San Rafael, and Walnut Creek, which is East Bay. And so working backwards, now you've got the beginning and the end. The middle piece in there was really realizing I wanted to grow a business and have something that I remember the day that I met a client that I couldn't pick out of a lineup because essentially an advisor I had hired had gotten a referral, landed the client, and they were a client of Friedman and Associates, which is my former firm. And I had nothing to do with any of it other than hiring, training, and all that. So that was a great moment. From there, we got to a point where we were around $250 million. We had under management, we had about six people. And I started looking ahead. I'm definitely a forward thinker. And I was watching the beginnings of all of these succession problems that you now hear about and know about. And at the age of 49, had an opportunity to merge with a 64-year-old founder of a company that was near me. And he was looking for a succession plan. And so we got together in 2009, the unauspicious year of 2009, and that was a merger, but they were twice as big. And what we all know about mergers is there's no such thing. But that was by design. I was going to run the company, mm-hmm, by design. And he was within a few years of retiring out. And that was the birth of Private Ocean. That was 10 years ago. And after we bought him out, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, we then made a few acquisitions. In between there, and I think many people know me from Juncture. Juncture was not by design. Juncture was an accidental business. Back when I was trying to grow, and it was the first tech bubble back in the 90s, I could not hire the help I needed. And I, a little bit of a student of technology, and thought, okay, I could visualize what I needed to do to create efficiencies to serve more people, and could not find it in the marketplace. So I hired a programmer to develop a program for me. Mm-hmm. That, of course, led to people wanted it, led to Juncture. And my whole inspiration for doing that was as a petri dish of development. And yeah, but still, my passion was always about serving clients and building an RIA.
So Private Ocean's really quite large. I mean, so you're doing stuff through acquisitions. That's a lot of advisors' dreams. How are you able to successfully do that? And it's a very ripe marketplace right now because advisors are aging out, right? What is the average advisor, 59 and a half or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
Talk to us about that if you don't mind.
Sure. The acquisition and the whole merger and acquisition phenomenon that's going on right now is tremendously challenging. And I can't really speak to, there's some great players, United Capital, Mercer, I mean, a bunch of them are here. There's some great options for someone who's built a firm to a certain stage and is looking for succession and a plan out. The thing that I always point to, and I will talk about this on a panel later today, the thing that I always think about is a lot of people focus on the deal aspects, and what's happening in the marketplace is, let's say I have a $500 million RIA that I built up and I'm the main guy and I'm 60 something and it's time. I'm thinking, what do I do? The internal succession's very difficult because the economics, you pay such a price relative to your other options that it's very difficult, even though culturally it's a beautiful thing to do. And it's great for morale and employees and clients. It's challenging. It's very challenging to do. So what we've done is we've essentially set goals to be larger. Our larger aspirations strictly come around to trying to provide more resources to do more things for clients. That is our whole inspiration. Mm-hmm. And organically is a big part of our method of doing that. And what we're calling the sort of the opportunistic acquisition. And what I mean by that is there's got to be great cultural, philosophical alignment. The seller can't be looking for top dollar because we can't pay it. We can't. And it's not that we can't pay a fair price. What we can't pay is the prices that are going around and being driven up by the private equity and the money chasing these national building firms. Well, and one of the big issues around that is, and my proposition to sellers, is to really think hard about what are your personal goals and what do you want the legacy of what you built to be? Because if you're not really crystal clear about that, then you're going to just go with the biggest bidder. And I'm waiting to see data of how successful those transactions are 3 and 5 years later. Because my proposition based on a merger and two acquisitions is the single biggest challenge is the cultural mm-hmm. integration and the retention of key people and the retention of clients. And these are not easy things. So when I see these deals where I just know that there's probably a Grand Canyon difference in culture and philosophy, yet the dollars are there, I don't know what that looks like 3 years and 5 years later.
I personally can't wait for that either. I'm so excited to hear. In fact, I've gotten into very heated discussions with valuation companies mm-hmm. Because, you know, I can understand wanting to get the best number, but I think the numbers are skewed. I think that the press has not done a service. I think there's unrealistic expectations. I know you, and then when private equity comes in, because they're looking at doing something fundamentally different than what you would be doing, which is assimilating a culture and still providing excellent service and all of that stuff. Not to be mean with private equity, but that's not to their model. Their model is to carve out 20% of the book. I mean, so I'm preaching to the choir there. Well, Greg, I'd like to have an opportunity to get to know you a little bit better too. And our audience, you know, if you want to find out a little bit more about Private Ocean, we'll talk about that at the end of the podcast so they can reach out to you. But what do you do for fun when you're not working?
Great question. I'm pretty active, and tennis is my real guilty pleasure. I play a lot of tennis. My daughter's a competitive tennis player, so that's all kinds of fun. And yes, she does now beat me, but she played for college, and she's a real good player. But tennis and hiking, boating, travel. I definitely like to go islands and Palm Springs and that kind of stuff. And to be really clear, until December and selling Juncture, I did very little of a lot of these things. Yeah. I was playing tennis and doing all that, but my time was so constrained with the two companies.
Yeah. Who's your hero?
Well, that's a good question too. I think of it this way when I hear that question. Somebody just doesn't pop into my head as a hero. What does pop into my head is there are just a number of mentors and angels that have come into my life, and they are people that have come into my life at different points in my life that I've learned so many things from and have been so helpful, literally starting with my parents. I was very fortunate. But I learned a lot from my grandfather, my father, my mother, and then professionally as I got older, just identifying and seeing people in situations that I looked at and realized that that's my mental image of what I wanted to be doing. It even started with, I remember coming... I was about 24 coming out of college, bachelor's in economics, and not knowing anything about financial planning and really unhappy. I was a really successful buyer for Price Club, which is now Costco, and I was buying candy, truckloads of candy. I was one of their youngest buyers. I was making great money and really unhappy. Culturally, it was not great. And I literally, people would ask me what I did, and I said, well, I ordered truckloads of Tootsie Rolls, and essentially, dentists love me, I'm creating obesity, diabetics. Yeah. I mean, I literally, that was the connection that I felt like this is what I was contributing to. And I was really missing that spiritual, I wanted to do something that made a difference in people's lives. And went on a little soul searching, and this is before computers were so easy to use, and did self-assessments, and used to do them in writing. And it came back and said, based on my answers, it came back and said things like, well, you have this really strong analytical bent, and you have this helper career, you have a passion about helping people. And it listed all these things in the financial fields, and accountant, insurance agent, all these things. And then it had this thing, financial planner. And again, this is 30-some years ago. And I didn't immediately know what that was. I immediately know what a CPA was, and I didn't know any fun ones. So I was like, eh. I know plenty now.
good save.
So I went to my parents, and I said, what's this thing, financial planning? You must know some people. So they sent me around to their vice president insurance agent and their vice president of investments at one of the wirehouses and all these people. And then my dad, and none of them resonated with me. It just didn't. It was all sales positions, and not that that was bad, but I just didn't. It didn't grab me. And then my dad said, "Oh, I have one more. I want you to go meet." And it was one of the first fee-only RIAs in San Diego County.
Wow,
this was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and he was a lawyer who had become an RIA. And I walked in, and I called him up. I said, "Will you give me? Can I come talk to you, please? You know, just informational interview." And he was very gracious. And I went and met with him, and I walked in, and here was this guy in, you know, mahogany office. and a three-piece suit and a tie, and he looked like my dad, lawyer. I grew up with that, but professional, just screamed professional. Hmm. And I talked to him for an hour, and I said, that's it. So how do I do that? So I went back to school and got a master's degree and said, you know, that's the level I want to be. But I think of people like that when you say heroes, and I think of people like that that were generous with their time, very helpful with me, and just generous. I have probably 30 more stories like that of people that were literally came into my life at different points that I look back and say, you know, how's that work?
Right.
Great timing, great generosity, you know, even down to things like some of the people today and more recently, maybe helping fund a deal or,
sure,
but just benefactors. I mean, people that step into your life and you respect.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my heroes.
Now, if you had all of the money in the world that you ever needed, would you become that for other people? What would that look like for you if you just never had to worry about it again?
Well, that's a great question because I've made it my life's mission to always be like that. And I've spent most of my life not having enough money to do all those things you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's funny you ask that question that way because I even talk to people about if I had all the money in the world, I'd probably be a philanthropist and a this and a that. But instead, I'm doing what I'm doing and I'm really passionate about it. Mm-hmm. But all that said, I have always, always tried to give back. Third year in the business, my dad was a lawyer and he was president of the, you know, County Bar Association and all that. And he always said, look, do not just take from your profession. You need to give to it. And I believe that too. Mm-hmm. So I was volunteering early days. Now out of that, some of the best relationships with some of the most amazing people that you read their books and you know, Harold and Dina and, you know, Harold Avinsky and Dina Katz. And I mean, these wonderful, wonderful people. I met them through volunteering, being on committees, mm-hmm. willing to serve. So to this day, my schedule is pretty ridiculous. And somebody calls me and says, I need some help. I will schedule time. Mm-hmm. Somebody calls me and they're in their 20s. I love this, actually. I get very excited about this. And I'm wanting to talk to somebody about just what's the career like. Love that. I mean, I bet you I talk to 20 or 30 people a year that way.
Nice.
I give them an hour. I schedule it. I have to. Mm-hmm. But I want to do that because people did that for me,
yeah. And
I think it's important.
Well, we definitely want to thank you for that, and I know that our industry desperately needs people who will take that time because there seems to be very few people who are willing to do that, and we need them. Well, we need these young people. Who's your favorite person in history and why?
History. Well, I'm kind of a World War II buff,
okay,
a little bit. So you have to think Churchill. I mean, talk about the right guy at the right, you know. But I think of some of the many and there's heroes, right? There's another place that I think heroes. But you think of some of those people in some of those times because think of the courage it took. Think of, especially when you look at what's happening in our days. So those are the people, that generation and that era and the decisions and the things they faced and their willingness to sacrifice and John McCain and all that generation, I think, wow.
When you think of success, how do you define that in your own mind?
Success is a really interesting concept, and most people go right to money. I actually think success is really a function of just how each and every person defines it for themselves. For me personally, I want to feel like I'm doing my best. I want to feel like people can count on me. I mean, one of the things, I call them Gregisms. There's a million of them. I throw them out. But every one of them was something that somebody told me. So I originate none of them. But one of the things my dad taught me early on is he talked about your reputation. And he said, you know, a reputation is an interesting thing. It's the hardest thing in the world to have a good one. It's the easiest thing in the world to lose. And it's at the end of the day, it's all you have. Mm. So it's an interesting thing when you live your life a certain way, and it's not that I do things because I want others to approve it. My litmus is, am I doing things that stand up to my standards? Can I look at it and go, I did my best, I put it forward, I was respectful, I tried to help? I mean, if all those things are true, then whatever else is said about it is interesting, and that's cool. But I need to know that I did that, and I approached it that way. So that to me is success. Now from all that has flowed lots of great things. You know, I enjoy the fact that, you know, at one point between Juncture and Private Ocean, I think I had 75, 80 employees, which is not the largest company on the planet. Sure. I get it. It's still micro in the world. But that's 80 families that I know I was contributing to having careers. And, you know, those kinds of things. I feel really good about that. But I don't live there. I just think, well, you know, success really is how happy you are day in and day out and how satisfied you are with what you're doing.
Most people who've achieved your level of success have a go-to thing. It's either a book, a TED Talk, some Gregisms. What is your go-to thing that you recommend to family, friends, or people that you maybe even mentor?
My go-to thing. You know, I don't know if I have a go-to thing. I think one of the things that I always credit just so much is coaching and executive coaching. And anybody who's ever heard me speak anywhere, podcasts, on a stage, whatever, I probably have mentioned somewhere coaching. Because, again, when I think back, there are two elements of coaching that I would directly attribute to really significant life changes for me. One is Juncture's very existence was because of an executive coach. And it goes like this. I was pretty determined not to. I thought it gave us a competitive advantage. So I was like, no, I created this for myself. No. And the coach asked me this question. It started with I was complaining that so many people wanted to buy it. It was actually annoying me because it was interrupting, you know, focus. Mm-hmm. And so the coach asked me, well, let me, you know, ask you a question. And this is great coaching, right? Ask questions. So they asked this question. Why do clients come to you? Because you're super passionate about working with clients. Why do they come to you? And I'm like, oh, well. So I went into my pitch about how passionate I was, and how this is what I love serving them. And so I went on for about 5 or 10 minutes. And then she said, is there anything else? Well, okay, so I can keep talking about that. Then she said, well, I don't hear anything about your software. So that was my eye-opening, Then she said, how might you benefit if you were to, how might your financial planning company and you benefit if you sold this technology to others that might want it? Hmm. So that was my next layer of aha. And then she went in for the kill. And she said, can you imagine if people bought this and you created a community of advisors that you were maybe sharing some of your ideas, but they were sharing some of theirs, can you imagine how that might benefit your financial planning practice? So what I love about that story is it exemplifies good coaching. She didn't have a horse in the race, and she didn't care what direction I went. All she was doing was helping me process, but asking me questions. And what my favorite moments in coaching are those aha, I see things differently because of the questions. So that's my go-to. I tell people, if you're struggling, talk to a life coach, talk to an executive coach, because it's fantastic.
Do you have a mantra, motto, or a saying that you use to hit that hard reset button when you find yourself veering off track? Focus.
Yeah, that's funny. I tend not to veer off track too much, but the one thing that I do that was inspired also through coaching, I laugh about it because I can literally hear the person that I coach with will say this to me when I get very revved up. Breathe. Pretty simple. There's your mantra, right? But literally, if you get too many things going and to take a step back, probably another coaching behavioral thing that's really changed how I am. My hard wiring is ready, aim,
oh,
fire.
Oh, sure, sure.
Ready, aim, fire, move, move, move. I'm the youngest of three. Everybody was very quick verbally, so it was defend yourself. And I have learned in the business world and personally, anytime there's any kind of issue or something's not going quite right or whatever in a conversation, I immediately back up. I immediately stop. I immediately ask questions and listen. And if I don't know where I want to go, I don't go. That's really different than my hardwiring.
Sure.
And the results of that have been profound culturally within the company, me personally, because when you do that and you take time and step back and reflect, when you do go back and address whatever the, call it a disagreement or something's going on, the quality of that and the outcome from that is so much better when you think it through. And and I will literally tell people, in a situation where it's getting a little bit, I'll stop and I'll go, I'll ask some questions and then I'll say, I'll get back to you. And if I'm really upset, I'll say, I'll get back to you when I'm ready. that's a different signal. But but the point is, I take time to reflect and breathe and think through, okay, what do I really want? And what's the best outcome here? And what's the best way to get there and move forward? Because otherwise you cause damage.
Okay. What's your proudest achievement?
My proudest achievement. Well, I feel good about a lot of things, actually. I feel good that I have twin 26-year-olds that seem really, I'm very proud of them. I mean, they managed to get to 26, and they're just phenomenal human beings. Mm. I played a small role in that, so, but I think I did what I could. So I don't, you know, the pride, I don't know that I would call it an achievement, but I'm proud of it.
Sure.
I think professionally, I mean, I feel really good about, you know, if you look, I've written and I always come from the spirit of how can I help? If I can save people some of the things that I've learned and experienced that let them get somewhere without having to experience that, many people have done that for me. So to me, I'm just giving back. And I feel really good about that. I mean, when people come up after I've said some things and said, here's three things I won't do because of what you said, I feel great. So I feel good about that.
Well, we have a pretty robust audience for this. So if somebody wanted to learn more about Private Ocean, you or anything, what is the best way for them to reach out and who would be that ideal person?
Well, who and where? I mean, obviously privateocean.com. I mean, we have a website. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on all those places that you can always reach out that way. My email is greg@privateocean.com. And I'm always happy to try to help. When you say who, I mean, listen, I talk to career changers. I talk to people entering the profession. I talk to people that have established businesses. A lot of my colleagues, I mean, we share war stories and best practices. So I don't have a narrow definition of who. If there's somebody that, you know, if I can help them, I will. And if that help is defined as, oh, but I've got this friend that would be great for you to talk to, given your question, then that's what I do.
Okay.
So I don't even begin to say I have all the answers. I just try to help.
Sure. Well, Greg, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, when we come out with a new idea, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And if you know somebody who could really gain value from what Greg had to say today, make sure you click that share button and tag them in it and say, hey, I was just listening to Greg Freeman. He said some things that I think would be very, very helpful to you. So for everybody at Private Ocean, this is Matt Hallern, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.
This was brought to you by Iris.xyz, a platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at Iris.xyz.